they take action, this report makes it clear that heat waves will become even harsher than they are already destined to be. Guardian also wrote the climate crisis is also a children's rights crisis. 1 in 4 children globally are already affected by the climate emergency, and by 2050, virtually every child in every region will face more frequent heat waves, according to a new UNICEF report. For hundreds of millions of children, heat waves will also last longer and be more extreme, increasing the threat of death, disease, hunger, and forced migration. The findings come less than a fortnight before the COP27 UN climate talks get underway in Egypt, and after a catastrophic year of extreme events, heat waves, storms, floods, fires, and droughts have demonstrated the speed and magnitude of the climate breakdown facing the planet. According to UNICEF, 559 million children currently endure at least 4 to 5 dangerous heat waves annually, but the number will quadruple to 2 billion by 2050, even if global heating is curtailed to 1.7 degrees, currently the best-case scenario on the table. In the worst-case scenario, a 2.4-degree rise caused by burning too many fossil fuels for too long, an estimated 94% of children will be exposed to prolonged heat waves lasting at least 4.7 days by 2050, compared with 1 in 4 children right now. In this climate nightmare, only small areas of South America, Central Africa, Oceania, and Asia will escape dangerously long hot spells. Children and infants are less able to regulate their body temperature, making them more vulnerable to the pervasive impacts of extreme and prolonged heat than adults. This includes a myriad of health problems such as asthma, cardiovascular diseases, and even death. Additionally, as intense that exacerbates drought, it can also reduce access to food and water, which can stunt development and increase exposure to violence and conflict if families are forced to migrate. Studies have also shown that extreme heat negatively affects children's concentration and learning abilities. The hotter the planet gets, the more catastrophic the consequences. UNICEF researchers examined the potential exposure to 3 heat measures, including duration, severity, and frequency, based on 2 greenhouse gas scenarios used by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for climate models. They found in 2020 there were around 740 million children in 23 countries where temperatures topped 35 degrees Celsius on at least 84 days. Under the worst-case scenario, this will rise to 816 million children living in 36 countries, mostly in Asia and Africa. In such heat, day-to-day activities like play and school are compromised, and more children fall sick or die. Children in Europe will have the highest exposure to severe heat waves by 2050, 1 in 3 in the best case scenario, 2 in 3 in the worst case scenario. In the Americas, exposure to severe heat waves will rise fivefold from 13 million to 62 million children in 2050. By 2050, 5 million to 8 million children will be exposed to all 3 high heat measures compared with none in 2020.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi and Shaykh Rouhani. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
You're welcome. And Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about the possibility of benefiting from Islamic teachings in the modern constitutions or law systems. We know that all across the world in today's world, some countries enjoy Islamic constitutions. But most of the countries are across the world are benefiting from a kind of secular system. Of course, in this secular system, some humane values are put. How Islam, as a religion of peace and generosity, can help the modern constitutions in order to develop, even in the modern world, even in the secular world? Sayyid Mohsen, let's start with you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, because Islam is a perfect religion, its constitution, its laws are perfect because it is made by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the creator of all mankind. Therefore, it has application in all countries,
yes,
all around the world for every single person. For example, in 2009, we were a group of students, yes, who were living in London,
yes,
and we did a research on the constitutions of UK.
Mm-hmm.
Are they Islamic or not?
Okay.
Or how much of the constitution of UK match the Islamic laws or the Quranic laws that we have?
Okay.
And we found out that 80% of the laws is according to Quran. 80.
Oh, 80%.
80. Oh. 20%, which is not according to the Quran, was related to the alcohol.
Okay.
I don't know, you know, the things that we have.
Yes.
The children's,
yes,
like law that they have under 16 and all those, mm-hmm, and the other things which are against Islam.
Okay.
You know, the other constitutions.
There was no name of Islam, but
there was no name of Islam.
Okay.
On the other hand, we, according to our research, yes, like our brothers and sisters, listeners can go and search on the internet or,
yes,
YouTube. It's basically in Urdu, basically, mm-hmm, the interview.
Okay.
Was by a general, which was in Pakistan. He,
yes,
went to UK.
Yes.
And he was from Air Force, basically. So he was invited there for a training session when he was young. And one of his friends in over there, he took him to a library, mm-hmm, which was specified for the UK Air Forces.
Yes.
And there he found the books, the Islamic books,
mm-hmm,
Usul al-Kafi.
Oh.
He found the Shia books over,
yes,
there. He found the Quran. And he said, what are you going to do with these books, mm-hmm, with the Hadith books that are there? They said, it's none of your matter. So he concluded himself that I thought that, look, they are non-Muslims, but they're benefiting from our books.
Okay.
Which are taught in the Hausa, and we don't know, mm-hmm, about these things.
Yes.
And tomorrow they come and they say, like, we have got this constitution and this and that. So these are the practical examples which I have.
That's right.
Said, which can be, obviously, you know, you can go and you find out these things when,
yes,
you search on the Google or the,
yes,
internet.
Yes.
So these are not the things which are hidden anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So when UK can have this, on the other hand, because of their own, like, rules or atheism or maybe,
yes,
like, you know, Christianity.
Secularism,
or
yes.
Secularism.
Yes.
They're not following 20% of the Quran.
Yes.
But it shows us that the laws that are related to the human beings, to the mankind,
mm-hmm,
in order to have peace in a country.
At least they are
peace,
in harmony,
yes,
with Islamic teachings.
That's why Sayyid,
yes,
Jamaluddin has said,
yes,
like Imam Khomeini has quoted, and,
yes,
he has said that, I have seen Muslims.
In non-Muslim lands?
I have seen, yeah, Islam,
mm-hmm,
in the non-Muslim,
yes,
land, but no Muslim.
Yes.
But in the Muslim lands, I have seen many Muslims,
but
not the
Islamic
Islam laws.
Yes. That's all right. Because the general human values are put in the religion of Islam, which can be the source of benefit for so many people, even we can say for the constitutions. Okay, Shaykh Rouhani, what's your take on that?
You know, actually, of course, it is a very interesting question that... for example, I mean, can the modern constitution or law systems across the world benefit from the Islamic teachings? I want to say they did that. They've already done it, you know, because historically talking, in the dark age or the era of arrogance in Europe, in the West,
yes,
they had nothing.
Yes.
You know?
The dark ages,
in the dark age, in the medieval. Yeah, yeah. So it was Muslims who Muslims who helped them.
Very good.
You know? The modern civilization in the West is not coming out of nothing. It comes out of the Muslims' heritage and legacy to them.
Are you sure about it?
Of course.
Absolutely
of course, okay. Of course, I am absolutely sure, because there were many seminaries, universities that were established in, for example, 12th century, 11th century, in the borders of the Europe.
Okay.
Like Nizami Baghdad, like Mustansiriya, like many other seminaries.
Yes.
And many of the students of Europe were attending the classes of these seminaries.
Uh-huh.
And they translated the works of Muslims into the different languages.
Into Greek and Romance.
Into European, into French, into German, into, let's say, English and Latin, or all these things.
Yes, yes.
And there are lots of riches in the internet. If you search, you find that. How many works of Avicenna, Farabi, Kendi, or many other Muslim thinkers were translated into the Western, let's say, languages.
Yes.
So it was actually Muslims who brought the new educational system for them, because they did not have any system. They did not have any university.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first universities that were established in French and Italy, in England, they were a copy of Muslim seminaries. Mm-hmm. And even nowadays, you need, when they are graduated, they wear a special kind of form.
It's turban.
That is an Islamic form.
Oh, really?
Exactly. If you search,
the gown,
it's not,
the gown,
exactly.
The gown, black gown.
Yeah, because of what? Because when, for example, more than 1,000 years back, we had Al-Azhar University.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And Nizamiye Baghdad was established some 1,000 years back.
Darul Hikmah,
and many other seminaries.
Yes.
So it was actually Muslims and Muslim seminaries, universities, let's say thinkers and scholars who helped them to brought new civilization. Otherwise, they were not able to do that.
That's right.
So that is why I think Islam played a very golden role in the history of mankind.
Yes.
Because it helped these modern, let's say, societies to change, to brought some change, revolution in their, let's say, Western societies. But of course, later there were deviations.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
And now we disagree with these kind of modern systems. But we cannot ignore the role of Muslims, the role of the teachings of Islam. As our friend rightly mentioned, our Sayyid, that, okay, 80% of the England's or the British constitutions are in accordance with the Islamic teachings. What does it mean? Does it mean that they were not familiar with the Islamic teachings and doctrines? Of course not. It cannot be something accidentally happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's all right.
So they were familiar because of those seminaries, those Islamic universities, those Islamic madrasas that were established by Muslims. And then the Westerners copied their systems, their educational systems, their works, and they were translated, the Muslims, let's say, books. So that's why I think they benefited a lot from Islam, though they might not confess it.
Yes, confess it.
Yeah. But in reality, if you see, in the dark age, they did not have any university, any scholar, any thinkers.
Yes.
So who helped them?
Yes.
It was Muslims.
It is about, we can't say now, somehow epistemology, but on the scientific matters too.
Exactly.
The Western,
in geometry, in biology, in physics, in chemistry, in all of these sciences.
Mathematics.
Yeah, mathematics. Yeah. It was Muslims.
Yeah, who helped them very much.
Helped them,
That's all right, because they had nothing. And these were the European scientists who were influenced by the Muslim teachings. Nice points, Sayyid Mohsen. And how, can we take back our heritage? Because nowadays, you know, the so-called Western worlds are very much happy and proud of having a fully human-based or value-based system of constitution. And they are accusing the Muslim lands that you do not have a value-based system of controlling your own countries. And your constitutions and laws are against humanity. How to answer it and how to, we can say, regain our own heritage?
Well, this is because of two factors. One is the propagation of the West or the enemies of Islam, because they know that Islam can take over the whole world, number one. Number two, role of media.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important, because the way they have the media in their hands, if Muslims were had this media, today we used to call, we will call them, like, if the media was in our hands, we used to tell them that there are people who are living in the dark age still, who are naked. They're living in a jungle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using the word jungle because recently, you know, one of the European, the head of European
Commission,
he said that Europe is the garden and whatever is outside the Europe is jungle. Well, they have forgotten about their history.
Yes.
Where did they got this garden from?
And he was using racist language and words.
Yes.
Okay.
So basically, this is the role of media. You know, this is the thing the way they are thinking, the things which they lack, they're accusing others to be like that, and they want to, you know, attach something with others. Whereas when you look at the Islamic history, as our dear guest has, the respected guest has truly said, for example, the astronomers.
Yes.
We have the list of that, like Khawarizmi, like we had the Farabi, the Ibn Sina.
Ibn al-Haytham.
We had, you know, there are many other.
Avicenna. Al-Mas'udi, Al-Kindi.
So when you look at the father of, for example, chemistry, you find a Muslim.
Yes.
You look at the father of, I don't know, astronomers, you find a Muslim.
Al-Khwarizmi, okay.
You want to look at the father of, I don't know, algebra, you know, you find someone who is a Muslim.
Yes.
So all these things are been taken by the Muslims.
That's right.
They didn't have it. The only thing but these are scientific
things. Can they affect constitution or system of law?
The aim is, the point is that we Muslims need to follow Islam as it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the place where we lack.
That's right.
Still, we have the kingship, like the system of kingdom.
Monarchy.
We have the kings, for example, in the Middle East.
Yes.
There is no need of that.
Yes.
Even the secular system or democracy that we have, this is not the way Islam is.
Mm-hmm.
The Islam is about, it says that you need to have someone who rules you, who is just, who is pure.
Mm-hmm.
Who tries to be pure, who does not commit sin, who does not go towards injustice.
That's right.
And that's why we have the idea of fuqaha or maraji or vilayat al-faqih.
Yes, okay.
In clear words.
Mm-hmm.
What is vilayat al-faqih? Vilayat al-faqih means a person who is faqih, who has spent his life in learning Islam. He has done the specialization. He has the, obviously he knows about that. He has the best management. He knows management. He knows politics. He knows economics. All the fields, he knows that, number one. Number two, he purifies himself. He never commits sins.
Yes.
Number three, he is just. Because if he is not a just, he cannot be a faqih or jurisprudence. This is one of the conditions. Now, these are the things that these characters are similar to the character of an infallible imam or leader.
Yes.
Which has been given by Islam, that after Prophet, we need to follow infallible imams or the leaders.
Okay.
So basically, Islam says that the one who needs to lead the country, he must be pure. He must go towards purification, number one. Number two, which is very important, he must be just.
Yes.
So he can spread justice, or he can apply justice in the society.
This is what the world
is
looking for.
If the person himself is corrupt, he does corruption or he's corrupt,
okay.
How can he bring justice to the society?
Mm-hmm.
And there we lack in the laws.
Yes.
We have the laws, we have the constitutions, but why we cannot apply this constitution of Quran in the society, Muslim world, it is because that the person who is responsible is not capable of doing that.
So we need capable people inside Islam to deduct, or it's better to say take out, you know, Islamic laws and somehow make it harmonized with the modern world.
They don't need to take it out because, you know, when Imam Khomeini came, in the flight from the France to the Iran, a journalist asked Imam Khomeini that you're going to do revolution and you're going to have a government. Have you made any constitution?
Mm-hmm.
He said, our constitution has come 1,400 years ago, which has been brought by the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, which is in the Quran. So there's no need of, you know, we don't need to put extra efforts today as a Muslim. The only thing is we need to have the right person at the right place.
That's
which we
right.
do not have.
Okay, that's right. Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, your final remarks.
Yes, you know, the reality is this, that historically talking, in the Islamic civilization, particularly in the golden age of Islam, I mean in the 4th and 5th Hijri centuries, Muslims established the best, we can say, as compared to the other part of the world, they established best kind of legal systems.
Yes.
Also, they have their own kind of systems, legal system, law systems. So And then the others, particularly in the West, Europeans copied these systems. So this kind of legal systems had its own influences on the Western and the European kind of constitutions.
Yes.
Then the point is that what happened in the recent centuries is this, that when the European became powerful after the topple down of Uthmanid, let's say, Sultanate, what happened to the Muslim is this, that unfortunately all the resources, even the natural resources, the human resources, the economic resources of Muslims were usurped mm-hmm. by the European powers.
Yes.
It is the reality of the history.
That's right.
So that's why after that, even we were not able to establish a very powerful and a strong kind of real Islamic systems.
That's all right.
After this, I mean, in these recent centuries, in two centuries back, I think, only the Islamic revolution in Iran is yes. a real kind of Islamic kind of systems. But for the rest of the world, the Islamic worlds, unfortunately, they couldn't do it. So now we see that this Islamic revolution brought a new system mm-hmm. and a powerful kind of government, a very strong and powerful kind of system in this world. And it is going to influence other kind of systems, other governments, other societies. I think it could be a very good exemplary kind of
That's
Islamic
right.
system
the
for
model.
The whole world. Okay. So if the other Muslim nations were able to establish a pure kind of Islamic system, not to be influenced by these modern and secular or like kind of systems, they would be able, inshallah, to have their own strong and powerful new kind of systems based
That's
on
right.
Islamic rules.
Okay.
One thing I think we should mention, that when we talk about the pure Islamic system,
mm-hmm.
this is not ISIS or Daesh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because some people might think, oh, they want to go to the back.
Yes.
They were
the
not
Salafi
the Islamic system.
No,
they were not the Islamic system
yes.
at all. They
yes.
never followed the Islamic rules.
That's right.
Islam stops people from killing women and children where they were killing them.
That's right.
You know, Islam talks about the speech. It gives invitation, not with the sword.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Islam, it is not through the sword that you need to become
through
Muslim.
Through dialogue.
Through dialogue.
Through
when you accept
yes.
it by
yes.
heart. Through dialogues, through the reasons that
That's
are provided,
right.
then you become a Muslim. And this is we need to clarify this thing
That's
when
right.
we talk about the pure or the original source. It's not this thing which today West is showing to the rest of the world.
That's right. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh and Sayyid Mohsen Nahwi, for a nice elaboration regarding how to benefit from the religion of Islam in order, we can say, to help modern constitutions or law systems all across the world. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parstoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye.
A symphony of nature. Oh, oh, it's taking my breath away. I'm so blessed out here today.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us ponder on how to dress in public as expounded to us by the embodiment of dignity, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. He whose dress is chosen by knowledge will have his defects screened from people.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The 22nd Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit successfully concluded on September 16th in the Uzbek city of Samarkand, where its 8 permanent members were gathered to discuss contemporary regional and global challenges. This year's summit was of particular importance for yet another reason: the formal inclusion of Iran as a permanent member in the organization, a Central Asian security body originally formed by Beijing and Moscow as a counterweight to the United States' influence. The Iranian foreign minister wrote on social media by signing the document for full membership in the SCO, "Now Iran has entered a new stage of various economic, commercial, transit, and energy cooperation." Iran's full membership is expected to become effective in April 2023. But what will Iran's membership of the SCO mean in realpolitik? The Shanghai Cooperation Organization is the largest regional organization in the world, so the mere SCO membership could bring Tehran a degree of international prestige. Acceptance of Iran as a full member of the SCO will open up a new horizon of multilateralism. In fact, it dovetails with Tehran's policy of pivot to the east, which seeks, among other things, finding strategic allies who can help the country stand against the hegemony of the West, resolving the country's banking and trade issues primarily caused by U.S. sanctions, and further enhancing its position in the Middle East and Asia. In this regard, joining the SCO is a success for Iran on both the economic and political fronts. In the words of the Iranian President Sayed Ibrahim Raisi, "One of our priorities today in foreign policy is preferring the East to the West, neighbors to remote countries." Since 2018, when Donald Trump withdrew from the Iran nuclear deal, also known as the JCPOA, the Iranian economy has suffered critically. Full membership of the SCO can help Iran cushion the blow of America's unilateral sanctions, to say the least. As the world's largest regional organization, comprising 40% of the world's population and 30% of global GDP, the SCO can provide an effective multilateral institutional capacity for Iran to nullify the crippling sanctions imposed by the United States and its allies. On the other hand, adding Iran to the SCO structure will raise the substantial value of the SCO as a regional organization. The SCO now has all the necessary players to solve regional challenges like security, connectivity, and economic development. In fact, the inclusion of Iran marks a new era of regionalism, one based on the principles of shared destiny and win-win cooperation for the region. China and Russia, as two major members of the SCO, have established a wide-ranging and close relationship with Iran over the past few decades in such areas as energy, arms sales, defense cooperation, and geostrategic balancing with the United States.
This organization and the membership of Iran can provide a very good access to more cooperation. So Iran can provide all abilities such as energy and other assets which we have to share with the members.
Right after the announcement of Iran as the 9th permanent member of the SCO, the Iranian political analyst Sayed Mohammad Mirandi tweeted, "The U.S.-led unipolar order is rapidly collapsing, and a rising Iran will play a key role in creating the world's emerging geopolitical reality." Iran's accession to the SCO has geoeconomic importance as well. It can help Iran become a hub country by playing a central role in the east-west and north-south transit corridors. Tehran has assured the SCO members to provide safe, stable, and reliable routes on the north-south corridor and at the same time supply remarkable infrastructure in its southern port, especially the oceanic port of Chabahar. In 2021, Iran's trade with the SCO member states exceeded $37 billion U.S. dollars, which accounts for about 30% of the country's total foreign trade. Although the Shanghai Cooperation Organization was formed as a result of security concerns, the concept of security itself has expanded over time to cover other areas not traditionally considered as security-related ones. Iran's membership in the SCO is also in tandem with the Chinese policy of Asian people to uphold Asian security. Given its political clout in the region, Iran can play a central role in dealing with the issue of Afghanistan, a security concern for the SCO members. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization works to strengthen security and trade cooperation in Eurasia. Iran's membership in the group would demonstrate the country's good relations with China, Russia, and Central Asia, at a time when the West is hell-bent on rendering Iran an isolated country. For example, in August, Tehran and Moscow announced they would start using their own currencies for trade rather than the dollar. Iran and Uzbekistan also signed several cooperation agreements ahead of the SCO summit. And back in June, Iran and Kazakhstan unveiled a new railway network in a further effort to boost trade. For years, the West has been tightening the screw on Tehran to abandon its peaceful nuclear program. But with the country's recent membership in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the West's stick seems even less threatening than before. Iran can now cooperate more intensely with China, Russia, and the rest of the SCO members, such as India and Pakistan, to build immunity against Western sanctions and pressures, a game changer the West didn't like to face in dealing with Iran.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of the Almighty Allah. Dear brothers, dear sisters, salam alaikum. So welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. The topic of this episode is a question. Why does Allah test us? First, we'll look at the calendar. Today, Saturday, is the 8th of Jamadi al-Awwal, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 12th of Azar, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 3rd of December, 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Verses 1, 2, 3 of Chapter Ankabut from the Holy Quran, we're gonna listen to.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
ألف لام ميم.
ألف لام ميم.
أحسب الناس أن يتركوا أن يقولوا آمنا وهم لا يفتنون.
Do the people think that they will be left to say, "We believe," and they will not be tried?
وَلَقَدْ فَتَنَّ الَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِهِمْ فَلَيَعْلَمَنَّ اللَّهُ الَّذِينَ صَدَقُوا وَلَيَعْلَمَنَّ الْكَاذِبِينَ.
But we have certainly tried those before them, and Allah will surely make evident those who are truthful, and He will surely make evident the liars.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
It's evident that Allah the Almighty knows everything, even the things before the creation of mankind. The purpose of knowledge here is the objective manifestation of their affairs and their external existence. In other words, it is the practical effects and evidences of the deeds, that is, whoever has it in his interior must pour it out externally. The reason of this issue is also clear, because reward and retribution have no meaning unless the inner intentions and esoteric qualities are practically seen in man's action.
Shukran ya Rabbi, shukran. Hadayta qalbi, shukran. Nawwarta darbi, shukran. Shukran ya Rabbi,
shukran ya Rabbi, shukran. هديت قلبي شكرا نورت دربي شكرا شكرا يا رب.
Remember, I start this episode with a question: why does Allah test us? Actually, life is filled with ups and downs, and there are times where our trials seem unending. In the Quran, there are several verses in which Allah talks about the varying ways we will be tested, but He also provides a care package to help us navigate those trying moments. Why are we tested? This is a very common question from Muslims, people of other faith or no faith, so it's important to reflect on it. Lack of answers can sometimes distance people from their faith. If a person doesn't understand why trials happen, they can start to feel life is unfair, or even that God is being unfair. But Allah is the just, and He is Ar-Rahman, the most merciful. He never wants ill for His servants. He only wants the best for us. Sayyid Baqir al-Qazwini.
If God knows the outcome of our actions, God knows the good doers will do good, the evil doers will do bad. So why did He bring us in the first place? Just take us to the day of judgment directly, and the good doers, those who would do good, take them to paradise, and the others punish them. There are two primary reasons. Number one, God brought you to this life and tested you so that on the day of judgment, you cannot object. Because if God didn't bring you to this world, and on the day of judgment, God would say, you know what? You, let's say Hitler, okay? God would tell Hitler, you're going to hell. Hitler's like, why? I didn't do anything wrong. God will tell him, no, but I know you would have done wrong. Like, no, I didn't do anything wrong. And he would object. And people would sympathize with him. Right? So God brings you into this life to prove to you whether you're good or bad. So that on the day of judgment, no one can have an excuse and say, God, I didn't do that. Who said I would have done that? Let's say Hitler would challenge God on the day of judgment. I challenge you. I wouldn't have done that. Then we see that the system of reward and punishment would be weak on the day of judgment. But now, after Hitler did what he did, he has nothing to justify on the day of judgment. Killing innocent people, you cannot justify that. And humanity will be witnessing. Everyone in the world will witness, yes, he was a criminal, he deserves to go to hell. So this is one reason.
Sp-
special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every bar.
Today's a special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
On the continuation of today's special, we reach the reasons why we are tested. We were created to worship Allah, and we all made a promise to do so before we were sent to earth. Tests are a means for us to fulfill this promise. In fact, they are a sunnah of Allah. What does it mean? Tests are the means by which Allah distinguishes between us, because they help to expose faith and lack of faith. Allah states in the Quran in chapter 29, verses 2 and 3, "Do the people think that they will be left to say, 'We believe,' and they will not be tried? But we have certainly tried those before them, and Allah will surely make evident those who are truthful, and He will surely make evident those who are false." Again, there was chapter 29 of the Holy Quran, verses 2 and 3.
رَبُّنَا رَبُّ الْقُلُوبِ وَهُوَ عَلَّامُ الْغُيُوبِ فِي الشُّرُوقِ وَفِي الْغُرُوبِ نُورُهُ يَهْدِي الْعَصَى رَبُّنَا رَبُّ الْقُلُوبِ وَهُوَ عَلَّامُ الْغُيُوبِ فِي الشُّرُوقِ وَفِي الْغُرُوبِ نُورُهُ يَهْدِي الْعَصَى رَبُّنَا الْهَادِي الْوَدُودِ فَضْلُهُ مِلْءُ الْوُجُودِ عَفْوُهُ خَيْرٌ وَجُودٌ فَارْتَجِي دَوْمًا رِضَى.
Now, what about ways to face trials with a positive heart? Dear friend, believe in your heart that Allah is your aid. Once I came across a patient who was requesting her doctor to prescribe antidepressants for her as she was growing through a stressful phase in life. The doctor, knowing the harm of such medicines, counseled the lady instead. The doctor's beautiful words still echo in my mind. He said, "Despite believing in Allah, the reason depression encircles us in stressful situations is because we say with our tongues that everything will be fine, inshallah, but we do not truly believe it in our heart." Imagine if your mother promises you that she will make things right for you. You will trust her because, you know, your mother will not leave any leaf unturned to bring goodness to you. Then how is it that we do not believe in the promise of our Lord, who loves us 70 times more than our mothers? He promises us in His book, not once, but twice. Listen. "For indeed with hardship will be ease." Indeed with hardship will be ease. Chapter 94, verses 5 and 6 from the Holy Quran.
The second reason, in order for you to experience that heaven, you have to be qualified. Because only a soul which has been qualified and tested can actually experience that. Let me give you an example. Does anyone know how this nice gold that we see, this neat gold, how is it produced? Anyone? How is gold produced? Because look, those, you know, companies which go and extract the gold from the ground, it doesn't look that nice. No. It looks very ugly. So what do they do to it? In order for you to get pure gold, you've got to burn it. Otherwise, it won't take that nice shape. Those beautiful oysters, right? What do you call them? The pearls. Those beautiful pearls. You need that pressure of the sea, all that pressure to make those beautiful pearls. Diamonds, they have a process. So we see this is a process of what? Purification. How do you purify gold and separate it from other elements? You melt it. And this is exactly the word God uses in the Quran. He says, I've brought the human being into this world to melt him. The believers, they are melted. You get rid of all those contaminants and you remain with a pure soul, like that pure gold. This pure soul is the soul which is qualified to go to that paradise. If you don't go that way with a pure soul, you will contaminate paradise. So this is another reason why God brings us into this life, to give us the chance to purify our souls. That's why the Quran, for example, in Surah Al-Jum'ah, in speaking about the role of prophets, what does the huwa alladhi ba'atha fil ummiyina rasulan minhum? God has sent a messenger. What's his role? Yatlu alayhim ayati, to recite the signs of God. The second one, wa yuzakkihim, to purify their souls. The role of a prophet is to help you purify your soul. One of the joys of a believer on the day of judgment in paradise is the fact that he earned that reward. Let's say 10 years ago, some university would come and will tell you, Abu Ahmed, Osama, Mackenzie, here's your degree. You would get happy, obviously, getting a degree. It's nice, it's a reward. But would you appreciate it? No. But when you spent all those years and those sleepless nights studying and working and you earned it, then you're given a degree. That's the joy, right? That's the joy. God wants you to enjoy paradise at the best way possible. That can only be possible if you worked for it. If you earned it in this life and you went through difficulties and you passed the test. Otherwise, if God directly takes you there, you will not taste that joy. So that's another reason we can add.
Dear brothers and sisters, thank you very much for joining us. That was all for today's special from IRIB English Radio. Inshallah, we continue this topic, why does Allah test us, on the next episode, tomorrow. Till then, we leave you in Allah's blessings. Have a nice time.
Told me that I'm crazy, who you're praying for? They told me there is nothing, who you're looking for? Stop doing what you're doing, cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes, I was mesmerized. But deep inside, I know that there's a better world. Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.